A tree podcast rooted in real stories and growing knowledge from soil to canopy. Today's episode is a special one. We're stepping back in time to hear the story of someone who has lived through nearly every major shift in the tree care industry. Matt Baldwin and I are joined by Rick Patrick, one of the earliest ISA-certified arborists with almost five decades of experience in the field. Rick got his start in Northern California in the late 1970s, learning the trade long before formal education programs and certifications were common. He later brought the knowledge back to Indiana, where he built his own tree care company and continued shaping the industry at a local level. This conversation is about more than just one career. It's about how arboriculture itself has evolved. Rick, before we dive into the story, we have Matt here as well, and you guys both have a past together. Is that true?
Absolutely. Matt was probably the best thing that ever happened to me coming back to Indiana as far as we do have a relationship. The way I met Matt was Matt Nichols, a friend of his. He helped me out when I first moved back to Indiana. I didn't have a base. I didn't have people to fall back on. In Northern California, I helped found a company, Pacific Tree Care. Later on, went out on my own, and it was more of a cooperative, which included Pacific Tree Care, where we all helped one another out. I didn't have that when I came here. I had to start over fresh, so I was working on my own. Matt Nichols helped me out. He had a friend, Matt Baldwin, who moved back from Arizona, and he said, hey, he could use some work. And I said, well, okay, you know, if you don't mind splitting your wages with him. And so he helped us out that day. I'm not paying for two guys. I don't charge that much. So we got him to help us out. And after that, I was talking with my first wife, Sequoia, and we were talking, and I said, I need to hire somebody. She goes, you need to hire this guy, Matt Baldwin. I said, yeah, I've met him. And I said, how do you know him? I said, he works at the Flower and Herb Barn, which was owned by Matt Nichols' father and his brothers. And she said, Matt, you would think Matt owned the place. He said, he's so involved. He's so focused on detail and wanting to do everything right. And I said, well, that sounds pretty good. And the rest is history.
Yeah.
How many years were we together? 10?
Yeah, it was definitely 10 or close to 10. Absolutely.
Yep.
But it just for all the listeners out there, this is going to be about Rick Patrick, not Matt Baldwin.
We just had to get a little story there to make a Matt blush, right?
Yeah, that's it. Well,
I have one or two words when it comes to Rick Patrick, and that is Mr. Miyagi. He was my Mr. Miyagi, but let's dive into this history of arboriculture.
So, Rick, right. What got you started in the tree care industry?
In 1979, and the way I started was, it was happenstance. I'd been working for the school district in Napa, and I worked there for about 18 months. It was, you got paid once a month. I was making $3.63 an hour, and I lived in Napa at the southern end of the valley. I decided to start my own yard care business and charge $5 an hour, and I wouldn't get paid once a month. It would improve my cash flow. The problem was, when I started out, there weren't computers, there weren't answering machines. There was Yellow Pages, and you advertised in the paper, and once you were established, you know, word of mouth helped you. I ran into these guys at one of my clients and from Britain Tree Care, and I was instantly attracted to Joseph Schneider because he looked like me. You know, two skinny guys, long hair, wire-rimmed glasses, and we got talking, and I said, you know, I'm starting out this business, and if you guys could refer me to your clients, I'd be happy to refer you to mine. And Joe Schneider, being Joe Schneider, took that to John Britton, and he said, hey, you know, this guy, this Hoosier, he's struggling, and maybe we could help him out. So he gave me little jobs, John did, went back and checked my work and offered me a job. And that was all because of Joseph, you know, just taking my story to heart.
Mm-hmm. So you said Hoosier, so you started out, you're from Indiana,
yep,
but
yep,
then
I was
moved
born,
out to
born in Plainfield, yeah.
Okay.
Hitchhiked out there in 3 days in 1977.
Nice. Yeah.
In winter.
That's a story in itself.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Through the Rockies in the snow.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else about that? Well, there was Joe Branham. He doesn't remember that. Joseph Schneider passed away back in December, and there was a celebration of life just last month. And Joe Branham and I are still real tight. He and I were talking, and he doesn't remember anything about that encounter, mm-hmm. but he was there. And that's how I got started. It was just being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And him offering me a job, and he said, well, you got the right idea. After looking at my work, would you like to learn a little more?
Mm-hmm. And I want to add in, after being in the industry for 25 years, you know, when Rick first started telling me about some of these characters back in California, you know, I would hear the story, then I would hear the story again, probably the following week, and then probably the following week. So those names really got ingrained in my brain. But I later found out that John Britton was a legend in the industry. So, and I'll throw this in there. He got to learn right from the beginning from a legend who was a true professional in an area where arboriculture was it was very progressive in that area. A lot of science-based knowledge running through that area. And then similarly, my start to the industry was through Rick. So I learned straight from Rick, who was, you know, obviously had learned a lot from those guys back in California. So we kind of have similar stories. It was a happenstance that I started working with Rick. So it's very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you talked a little bit about what the industry looked like in the sense that you didn't have computers.
No.
You didn't have, you know, voicemails. But what did the industry look like outside of like contacting clients?
Well, the big dogs when I was there mm-hmm. were Davy Tree and who else? Davy's the only one I can think of off the top of my head. Well, there's Millard Blair. You know, these guys were born in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to meet Mr. Blair. Don Blair, his son, is still big in the industry. I got to shake his hand. And that was something.
Yeah.
But John, as far as the way the industry looked, was there's still a lot of topping going on,
mm-hmm.
Just a lot of archaic practices. And the beautiful thing about John Britton was he was so far ahead of the curve. If Dr. Shigo is the father of modern arboriculture, then John Britton was one of his sons. Because learning about Codet, John said, we're going to go to Stanford University. There's this guy, Dr. Shigo.
For all you listeners, when he says Codet, that's the compartmentalization of decay in trees.
Thank you,
Matt. Codet. Codet.
Thank you. Thank you. He said he's going to be speaking at Stanford. And the way John did things, it's not like he goes. He goes, we all go.
Yeah.
We all learn. And so he took us to Stanford. And we weren't there for the lecture. That was... I don't know why we weren't there, but there was an after meeting. And Dr. Shigo was not allowed to talk about Codet at Stanford they because it was too controversial. They said, you know, stick to, you know, the basics. He was a forester. The way he learned about Codet, can I go into that?
Should I go into that?
The way he started studying it is he would buy standing timber. For milling and that sort of thing, working with the Forestry Service. And he talked to this guy who said he would not buy any trees where there had been flush cuts made. And the guy couldn't explain to him why. All he knew was is that it disfigured the wood. It marred the wood. There's something bad about if they had made a too close of a cut. So Dr. Shigo's like, wonder why this is. Mm-hmm. So he dissected. He said, I love cutting down trees. I love chopping them up, because he wanted to learn. He's like doing biopsies. So that's where Codet came along. We're at this meeting in Stanford, and he's talking the party line and not doing anything controversial. And John Britton says, can you tell us a little bit about Codet? And you could just see, the change in Dr. Shigo. He said, thank you, because what is your name? And I'm John Britton. And he says, I want to state for the record, we've never met before. And he goes, that's right. And he goes, off we go. Bam. So he started talking about Coded.
Nice.
And that was my start. John Britton, education was everything. It's like when I was coming up, at conferences, it was always the owner, maybe his top climber, or if he had a manager. But most guys just had like a lead foreman or something. It wasn't that much of a hierarchy. That wasn't John Britton. He said, you know, we're going to this conference, and we're all going, and we get paid. He pays our room and all that. And his logic was, I can't possibly attend every seminar at this conference. And he was, frankly, I'm not interested in everything. He goes, or not as interested. He goes, we all have different interests. We all have different strengths. And he goes, if we all go and we're going to different sessions, we can then come back and share what we learned.
Nice.
And that was John Britton in a nutshell.
No, that's awesome. What year was this?
79, 80. Oh, okay. I started in 79. It was probably 80, 81.
Okay.
And he was instrumental in introducing certification.
Okay.
He was a part of the original putting it together. The Western chapter put it together, and the international, the parent ISA, the International Society, said, "Okay, go for it.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what happens," because he wanted to increase the professionalism.
Yeah.
And obviously, it
worked.
It.
Yeah. Would you say that prior to that, then it was just learning by doing?
Mostly, yeah. You learn, and depending on who was teaching you,
you
know, people, like I say, people were still topping. We didn't climb with gaffs, spikes, hooks, whatever you want to call them, unless we were taken down the tree.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, it's like, well, how else are you going to get in the tree?
Yeah.
You know, we set lines and things. John was light years ahead of most people, certainly in Napa Valley. There were other people like Sonar Tree Service, which Robert Phillips, he's a renowned
climber in the industry.
Oh, my goodness. He's and a gearhead. He would go to conferences and bring back things and share those with us. He was in Sonoma County in Bay Area, but he and Joseph Schneider especially formed a tight relationship. And he, you know, he's the one who showed us, oh, cambium saver. Here's how you install a cambium saver. Here's a porter wrap. Here's the Hobbs lowering device, the first lowering device.
Where were these guys getting their knowledge?
The Hobbs device, the guy made it himself.
Oh, okay.
He made it, and it was unwieldy. It was unwieldy, but, you know, it was the prototype. It was the first one. I got to see it in action, and it took two men and a boys to put the thing onto the tree, but it was a start. And Robert learned from people from Chicago and things, people who were doing things different.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always paying attention, and he brought those things to the rest of us. And back to certification, there's a mistake here. It says arborist number 52. I was actually arborist number 154. And what happened is they started the certification at the number 100, so that nobody would be number one. You know, they thought that would be a little bit weird. Now somebody's 101. I don't know who, but then they went in alphabetical order for everybody who passed. Well, my last name is Patrick. Joseph Schneider, last name is S. It's the only time I ever came out ahead of Joseph Schneider on anything, because I'm number 154, and he was number 156. So, and that tells you how many people were in the first certification. When you got, I'm P, he's S, and there's one guy in between us. So I don't know. There's probably less than 100.
Yeah, that's.
But you were part of the first group.
Part of the first.
Entire world.
That's pretty amazing.
There were other certifications on the East Coast. They did like a tree shade thing. I don't really know the history that well. There were other people doing things, but this was the blueprint for what we see today, what we know today is certification.
Now you fast forward, not that we're going to skip through anything else, here at Bluestone Tree, we have now 10 ISA certified arborists.
Very good. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. When I came here, there was myself in the Bloomington, Brown County area. There's myself, Douglas Fowler, and Mark Adams. And before I moved back to Indiana, I knew I wanted to live down in this area, so I sent out a bunch of letters mm-hmm. of introduction. And the only guy I heard back from was Mark Adams, and that was to sell me his equipment because he was moving to Georgia. So it's like, okay, so I had to start fresh, which it was interesting. It was challenging because I'd never. The reason that Joseph and I parted ways is he had a vision, mm-hmm. and his son, who's now in his 40s, they realized that vision, and since Joseph has passed. Jacob was running it long before he passed. He wanted to grow, and I was just never comfortable. Most guys we ever had, most people I ever employed was three, Matt and two others. And I didn't, when people asked me how many people I had working for me, I said, I don't have anybody working for me. I have three guys that work with me.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it.
No, it's a great way to run a business.
Yeah.
Since you're in the beginning here of the tree industry becoming more professional, when did you start noticing that increase in professionalism?
Almost immediately. I want to say people started recognizing us more. It's like certified arborist. People didn't even know what the word arborist meant. We raised the quality of work and the expectations of people. I mean, they're still topping. I drove in today, and there's a freshly topped tree. Mm-hmm. There, you know, that's to me, that's ignorance and apathy. I don't know. I don't care. Because there's no reason for it. Here's a great quote about topping from John Davy, 1846 to 1923, founder of Davy Tree Experts. What he said about topping trees, this is 1907. Do it right or don't do it at all. He called it the work of ignorant men and said, nature does not form those beautiful and health-giving tops of shade trees to be cut to pieces to furnish beer money for a lot of tree fools. 1907, over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So there's no excuse.
No.
And we don't have to worry about that much. To me, the big bugaboo now is volcano mulching. It's still being done.
Well, topping is still happening. I'm from northern Indiana, and it's really bad. You head a little further north, and there's still tons of trees that have been topped.
It's sad.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Yeah, it's still pretty common practice, northern Indiana.
Mm. What else would you like to know?
I guess just going on this same topic, you're talking about you saw professionalism in the industry and people within the industry, but when did you start seeing a change with clients and just general public?
Probably in the 70s and 80s. That's mm-hmm. that was the big upheaval with Dr. Shigo.
Mm-hmm.
And John Britton, like I said, it was an anomaly that John would bring us to conferences. But with the certification, we still didn't have computers, so it was a lot harder to keep your CEUs up. You had to go to conferences.
Mm-hmm.
You could do some magazine stuff, but you certainly didn't go online because there was no online to go to. That meant more employees were coming, and they were being treated more as professionals. We were kind of an afterthought. The people who were actually doing the work were kind of an afterthought. It was, you know, how do you run the business? You know, that sort of thing. It wasn't even so much focused on proper tree care. I just realized how fortunate I was to just fall in with the right group of guys.
Mm-hmm.
We had one guy, Peter Titus, another great tree man. He came from a local tree service that topped, and in his heart, he felt like, this doesn't feel right. So he came and wanted to apply a job. John said, well, go talk to the guys mm-hmm. and see what they think. And so we interviewed him. I think Joe and Joe, being Joseph Schneider and Joe Branham, they were a little harsh on him. And after he left, I said, well, that's just great. You know, I said, you don't teach people. You don't learn by criticizing. I said, he's here for a reason. He doesn't need to be told what they're doing is wrong. So he came to work with us anyway, and which was good, and he's a good man. So.
It seems like a lot of what I believe, from what I know, from mm-hmm. learning from Rick, a lot of the improvements within the industry were probably because there was a lot more based off of scientific research rather than just guys going out there and doing work, which it opened up all kinds of opportunities when we look at just trying to maintain trees in a healthy manner rather than just focusing on, you know, making money. So I think that's a big part of it. Once they started doing more research, once they started looking at Alex Shigo's research and all the work he did with dissecting trees and seeing how trees react, I think it really spurred from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard to imagine now that that was controversial.
Yeah.
You know, that he was this nut, you know, this, wow, that's just too far out there. And, and the clients responded to that. And I think being in the Napa Valley, that helped us because there was a lot of disposable income with the wineries and that sort of thing. Although they were in their infancy, they were just taking off, just getting world recognition. And so that helped us having people that, you know, could afford quality tree care. We would literally climb valley oaks, massive oaks, with hand pruners. Mm-hmm. There'd be six guys in a tree, and part of what you're using is a hand pruner, and you'd use a chainsaw now and then. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I you just sparked a thought is, you know, while you guys were professional, that professionalism was still kind of in its infancy as well, because I remember you telling me that you guys back then were wearing bandanas. That's a big part of what you wore, you know, and you guys were the professionals back then. So it shows you, you know, how far it's came to today where now we're wearing hard hats with communication systems.
And scary to think about.
So not just a education and professional like advancement, but there was also safety changes throughout the years.
Oh my. Yeah. Through my entire career in California, the first 25 years of tree work that I did, no, we would wear a hard hat if we were working with cranes. And we were one of the earliest people to start using cranes and seeing the benefits of that. We being John Britton. Yeah, they were called low renters. You're kind of like a pirate, you know, you wear your bandana, and that was just to keep our long hair clean, you know. And they were called low renters because a client one time, he's talking to John, and he sees all these guys up there with their bandanas in the trees, and he says, I like your guys' hats. Kind of low rent, though, aren't they? So that's how that came about. But yeah, no chainsaw chaps. We did wear ear protection, and eye protection was optional. I consider my eyeglasses eye protection, which is insane. So now I know this is about Rick Patrick, but I've got to go back. I didn't wear any of that stuff because we just didn't. And in fact, in the culture, I'll go there. Free climbing was still acceptable. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to be tied in. You just start climbing up until you got somewhere where you felt comfortable. If you needed to tie in, you would, but you might climb the entire tree and not be tied in until you get to the top.
Yeah.
And that was acceptable. We get here, and after Matt had 3 years, that was his apprenticeship, wax on, wax off. And he wanted to become certified. And he came to me and said, Rick, he goes, I feel like a chicken pecking around on the ground behind you. And he goes, I want to start climbing. It's like, sounds good to me. I was 50. I was 50 years old at that point. It's like, that sounds good. And so we went to Baltimore. One of the, to get his gear, his saddle, his
tree care industry association TCI. Conference.
That's right.
Annual conference.
Trade show. Yep. Yeah, trade show and conference. And one of the sessions we went to is John Bell, who I didn't know who he was, but now he's well known in the industry for the work he does on safety. He was asking people, how long have you been doing this without using protective equipment, you know, for 5 years, and, you know, pretty much a bunch of hands go up. When he got to 25 years, I hold my hand up. I'm the only guy, and I think, you know, aren't I clever? I've been doing this 25 years, you know, I'm really something else. And John Bell looked at me and he said, you are a ticking time bomb. Matt immediately turned to me and whispered in my ear, he goes, we're going to get that stuff. We're going to start using it. And I said, oh, okay. I said, well, if you'll wear it, it's like, we just never thought about it, but if you'll wear it, I'll buy it. And that,
well, yeah, I mean,
that is directly, don't you disagree with me?
No, it was, you know, I have to give credit where credit is due. I mean, Rick from the beginning was constantly talking about it, being a professional, and I started with him part-time in the fall, and then I came full-time in the spring. And immediately he was talking about things like, you know, using terminology I've never heard before, arborist, International Society of Arboriculture, Indiana Arborist Association. And I was like, oh, wow. I was like, soon enough, I was like, well, I want to be a member of that. And it wasn't very long. I was a member. I didn't even have to get certified to become a member. And Rick invested money in that. Before I even became a certified arborist, I was became a member of the Indiana Arborist Association. I believe I became a member of the International Society of Arboriculture. And that made me feel like more like a professional right from the start. So, you know, and that, and it did lead to going to that conference and listening to those guys, and which did lead me to, you know, want to follow through and be more committed to safety and professionalism. But it was really because of the coaching and the way that Rick had, the way that Rick mentored, but also the way that he, it was the way he portrayed the industry from the beginning to me.
And that's a direct link back to John Britton, because that's how John Britton treated us. You're an integral part of this.
Going back a little bit, I guess, kind of throughout this conversation that we're just having. So you did talk about there were two arborists when you moved back to this area, but did you feel like you did go backwards in time a little bit from all that education you had out in California to coming to Indiana?
Well, to a small degree, but I was pleasantly surprised because my first thought was, is anybody here going to care about this?
Yeah.
What I found, living in Brown County, they're a lot more self-sufficient. So if they got a tree that needs to come down, Cousin Larry or Brother Joe needs the firewood and he'll take it down a lot of times. But and over here, it was a little more professional. You had Lee Huss, who was the city arborist for Bloomington, and he was certified and involved in the IAA and the ISA. And so he appreciated that, and that was a good stepping stone. The hardest part for me was coming from a situation where I had a fellowship and a brotherhood, and all of a sudden I did not have that support.
Yeah.
That was tough, and I didn't find that here. People were not as welcoming, and it's not that they felt threatened by me or whatever. It just wasn't how they did things. I finally got, after a few months, I got a call from Douglas Fowler saying, "Who are you?" I said, Rick Patrick. And he goes, "Why have you been recommending me to people?" And I said, "Well, there's some things I can't do. I don't have the equipment." And I said, "You're the only other certified arborist that I see." Coincidentally, he's also from the West Coast, so I don't know if that had anything to do with that. But I said, "You know, if there's a slate roof and a copper gutter and they need a limb off, I'm not going to be the guy who can do that." And part of being a professional isn't just saying, "Well, I don't do that." It's steering people in the right direction. And I do that to this day. You know, it's like, here are three companies that I think are your best bet. These are the people I would call.
Oh, and yeah. Rick loves, one of Rick's favorite pastimes when he goes out of town, or at least back when we had Yellow Pages, not very long ago. He likes to flip through the Yellow Pages and look through the tree service portion of the Yellow Pages and see if anybody is false advertising as a certified arborist. And then he turns them in.
Yeah. I did do that. I kind of forgot about that. But
watch out.
Yeah. So I did feel there was still probably more topping here than there was anywhere else. But overall, it was, I didn't spend much time in Columbus. For whatever reason, I was focused on the Bloomington, Monroe County area and Brown County. With the university and people from all over the world, this is a lot different from any other place in Indiana.
Yeah.
And that, I think that helped people appreciated that professionalism.
So do you have any advice that you'd give someone who is just entering the tree industry today?
Find yourself a company that values education. I don't recommend you go out and try to do it on your own right off the bat. Find a company. You might decide that you want to stay there, but if you're the kind of person that eventually wants to do their own thing, then you need to go see how other people do it and learn from the things that you see that they do that are strong, and maybe things that you think you would do different and perhaps better. Find somebody who values certification. That's where I would start, and has best practices, who do things safely, and have a good crew, camaraderie. I think it's so important to as people working together, that you're not just looking at it as your job and these are your coworkers. It's a brotherhood and sisterhood. We need more sisters.
Well, I'd like to take that time to congratulate Stephanie here. She just became a certified arborist in the last 2 weeks.
Back in the middle of March.
Oh. So
a month ago.
A month ago. I'm sorry.
Yep. Time flies.
Yeah, time flies.
Seems fresh.
Congratulations.
So much smarter now.
Yeah. What inspired you?
I love learning. And yeah, since working here, it's just been pretty interesting to me, as well as just advancing in my career. So yeah, moving out of the office and into the field again. So
yeah,
that's kind of exciting for me.
That's where I'll throw a plug in here for Bluestone Tree. Stephanie is our plant healthcare technician, and she is mentoring under Jerry. He's our plant healthcare expert here, and she gets to learn from him, similar in the way that I got to learn from Rick.
It's actually another California transplant as well.
Yeah. So, California transplant, and she gets to learn all the years of his experience right underneath him and bring it here to the Bloomington area and beyond.
Yep. So Rick, you've seen the industry for many years. Where do you see it going in the next 20 years?
Oh my, that's a really good question. I talked with Simon Normile right at the tail end of COVID when we talked about, oh, we want you to come and talk to the guys about safety and about the very things we're talking about. And I said, well, yeah, okay, chippers have really changed, and tell them about chipper safety. And he said, Rick, we don't use chippers, as we use grapples and these tub grinders. And I said, I feel like a dinosaur. And he goes, I'm a dinosaur, Rick. He goes, things have changed that much. And that made me feel better. The changes I see, yeah. So that sparked my imagination. I said, I was an elite back in the 70s and 80s. I was among the elite. And I said, now you guys are among the elite. And I said, someday there's going to be guys with jetpacks and lasers that are erasing limbs and doing all kinds of things that they'll be laughing. They'll say, Can you imagine using a shovel or an air spade? Wow.
Yeah, it's similar to, I'll tell clients occasionally, I'm like, yeah, I always think back to the pioneers and using cross-cut saws and axes to take down trees, especially those trees in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, just gigantic trees by hand. Guys were climbing them and doing everything we do, but with primitive equipment. And so when I start talking about the way that we use our equipment, knuckle boom cranes with remote grapple saws and things like that, and I'm explaining it to him, I'm like, oh yeah, I always wonder what it would be like if we could go back in time, the pioneers could see our equipment and how they would react, because they might take off running.
yeah I don't think they'd believe what they were seeing.
Thank you for joining us for part one of our conversation with Rick Patrick. Hearing Rick talk about nearly five decades in the tree care industry really puts into perspective just how much arboriculture has evolved. From climbing techniques and safety practices to education, professionalism, and the culture of tree work itself. Rick has seen the industry grow from an apprenticeship-driven trade into the modern profession we know today, and we're grateful he shared those experiences with us. Be sure to tune back in 2 weeks for part two, where we'll continue the conversation and take a deeper look at how equipment, tools, and technology have transformed tree work over the years, along with more stories and insights from Rick's incredible career. Thanks for listening to Acorn to Oak. If you enjoyed today's story or learned something new, join us next time as we keep growing tree knowledge from acorn to oak.